Hey, this is John Lee Dumas of the award-winning podcast, Entrepreneurs on Fire, and you're listening to the Excelsior Journeys with George Soroy. Prepare to ignite.
So would you say that that's kind of like the lightning bolt moment for
you? And that's
why
I taught myself how to draw, was actually the Little Mermaid, drawing stills of Ariel.
I've got better things to do tonight than die.
Sylvester jumped out of his chair and said, who the F is this?
I remember walking out of the theater with him saying, I'm going to write Halloween.
I'm rather impressed with your research. Rarely do people ask me about Children in the Corn.
It doesn't have to be perfect. Just do it. You know, throw some spaghetti against a wall. See if it sticks.
This is George Soroy saying to all of you, ever upward. Welcome back to Excelsior Journeys, part of the Once Upon a Podcast Network. This is George Soroy. Thank you so much for being here. And I am so excited to have with me two filmmakers that are all about blazing your own trail and also reaching back and making sure that everyone who is having difficulty getting their own projects off the ground, they are there to provide the roadmap to show how they did it. Alexandra Boylan and Andrea have for a couple of decades now been focusing on getting their projects out, creating their own opportunities, not letting anything get in their way, and creating results, because they've already produced over a half dozen films that are out there right now. And they even took the initiative to take one of their own projects, their most recent one, Identity Crisis, and novelize it themselves. They are focusing on all the different platforms, and here they are right now to add to that platform by giving us a wonderful breakdown of not only how they did this, how they made all these accomplishments, but how you can do it as well. Mm-hmm. So it is my thrill to welcome the Boylan sisters, Alexandra and Andrea. How are you both today?
We're good.
And thank you
for having us.
And thank you so much for being here. This is really exciting. The more I got to read more about what it is that you've done, what you're currently doing, everything just had me more and more excited. I was like, I cannot wait to have these two on here, because they are going to not only provide us with some great stories, but also to inspire this audience into pursuing their own projects, no matter what.
Yes. Yeah, I can't wait.
So for starters, one of the things that I am really fascinated with is the fact that you went ahead and took your latest project, Identity Crisis, and then did your own novelization, that's something along the lines of what George Lucas did with Star Wars, because he wanted to. Now, obviously, he himself did not write the novel, you know, like the novel form of it. You know, he passed it along to Alan Dean Foster, who went ahead and did the uncredited work on it. But he still saw that means of getting the story out there. And that wound up being a huge boost for the film and getting everyone's attention. So was that along the lines of what you were thinking of, just trying to tackle all the different formats that are available?
Yeah. Do you want to take it, Andrea, or me?
Sure, I can take this one. So definitely all formats. That you got it right on the nose there, George, because we really have a heart for teens and their moms. And we have been working on making films that fit that, you know, demographic, and that are something that moms can trust and teens love. And in the space of between movies and media, novels and books are big. That's a big, big piece. And I love contrasted or compared with George Lucas. That's amazing. But so we really want, part of it came out of my own journey as a mom, when I started to actually look at what my girls were reading, and what, especially if you get to that a little bit higher reading level, the content really doesn't match your age. And so we were like, hey, what if we take these stories that we're getting great responses about and people are really enjoying and turn it into a book? And that's what we did. And what we love, it's called Identity Crisis. You can find it on Amazon. Mm-hmm. And what we're excited about is at the end, there is a real cliffhanger. So we're excited about the next book that will be coming that will be able to further the story and answer all those questions everyone's wondering about.
So this is going to be the start of a series then.
Yes.
We want to do it. Sweet.
And we feel like sometimes, you know, when kids are watching movies, sometimes they're on their phone or they're distracted. So with the novel, it's even more of a way, because I mean, Identity Crisis is all about knowing that you're fearfully and wonderfully made and you're incredible. Mm-hmm. But, and it deals with confidence. And we feel like sometimes we don't always digest what we're watching. But if the kids read the book, then they'll digest it even more of what this message is about. Just try, because we were going to talk about this. You just got to try and put yourself out there. And that's what the movie and the book are all about. We hope that if kids read the book, it will more inspire them to go out there and try things.
That's great. That's great. And that's a really wonderful message too, that needs to be heard more. It's, yeah. It's getting out of your comfort zone. You know, yeah. If you're in your comfort zone, you're basically just on a treadmill. Right. But if you decide to get, to go out there and take a walk and everything, you never know what you're going to wind up discovering. And Alexandra, you know all about that based on your journey here. So what I'm really fascinated with is what I like to call the lightning bolt moment. And that's that moment in time when you experience something or hear something, meet someone, and it just makes you want to go like, ooh, that's the kind of life I want to live. Mm-hmm. That's the kind of person I want to be. Now, Alexandra, you made the trek out to Hollywood.
I did. And
Andrea, you're in the Midwest, correct?
I am in the Midwest, yes.
Excellent. And so what was it for both of you, really, that because both of you had this dream growing up, correct?
I would say that Alexandra had more of the dream than me. The part I bring to the table is that I always wanted to be a mom. So now I get to influence the content that all the other moms are looking for. But this was definitely Alexandra's dream, was to go out to Hollywood.
Nice.
Yeah. I grew up wanting to be an actress. I was acting in my high school plays. We were from Massachusetts. So I would go into Boston, audition. So from a very young age, I wanted to be in the entertainment industry. And at 19 years old, I packed up my Toyota Corolla and I moved to Los Angeles all by myself. All by myself to pursue the entertainment industry.
Wow.
And yeah, and it was a crazy journey.
So that was right after high school? So no college or anything?
I went to 1 year of college per my parents' requirement. Mm-hmm. And so I was like, fine, I'll do 1 year and then I'm going to California. I know I want to be in the film industry. And I knew, so I did 1 year at Gordon College in Wenham, Massachusetts. And once that year was done, that car was packed and it was in California.
Wow. So was that first year, that solo year of college, did that prepare you at all for this trip, this trek, or was it just general studies? Is that what you did?
I studied communications.
Okay. Well, there's that. Okay.
Yeah, there wasn't much theater at the school that I went to. So actually, when I moved out to LA, I knew that I wanted to be an actor, but I don't say that. I think in college, I spent so much of the time working to save money because my heart was dead set on coming out here. So I think I spent more time making money than I was probably studying because I was trying to save enough to move out to Los Angeles.
Nice. And you still kept up with your grades and everything while you were doing that?
Yeah. I had good grades. If I had stayed in school, I would have done great. But
now
that I moved out here and I learned from the mean streets of Hollywood. So I feel like I got my education in this industry by being out here and just doing it,
That's great. And a lot of times that's what you need to do. There's only so much you can learn from inside of college. Right. And if you are able to get out there and actually experience it, if you have the means to do it, then vaya con Dios, just go ahead and do it.
Make it happen.
Exactly. So there you are. You're 19 years old. You went ahead and drove all the way across.
Yep.
What was that trek like while you were going there? Because you said you were all alone. You got your place.
Well, I will say that my parents helped me get here. They helped me get here and be here, helped me find an apartment. That was amazing that my parents came out because I was not prepared. I didn't realize that apartments didn't come with silverware. I was that young and naive that I was like, wait, apartments don't have anything. So it was very good that my parents came out, but they just came out for a couple of weeks. And then once I got my apartment, they went back to Boston and I was on my own. And in 1999, kids have it so much easier now. We didn't have technology. I would have to go to the newsstand and buy Backstage West and go through and circle auditions and then get my headshots and put them in envelopes and send them out in the mail to people and then wait for someone to call me for an audition. And
yeah, there's no emailing going. No, there was some emailing going on, but it was not. It was nowhere near.
No.
Like you would have to wait like about, you know, 30 minutes or so for an 8x10 image to load up on the screen. So yeah.
Right. Everything was mail. And, you know, even nowadays we're so connected. So when I moved to LA, I didn't know anybody and I didn't really quite know how to break into the business. And we didn't have Facebook or Instagram to get connected. So I really had to start from nothing and just kind of be like, okay, how do I break into this industry? You know, and it was tough.
Which is a really good way to do it because you really just had to figure it out for yourself from the start. You didn't have, say, like Instagram or anyone to get connections with right away. Not to denigrate that. I'm glad that people have those connections right now. But it just feels like you were able to just kind of make your way through and just by doing the work. There were no shortcuts on this.
No. Yeah, you just had to do it and you had to stick it out and, you know, hustle. And I mean, I did. I spent 10 years hustling, pounding the pavement as an actor, trying to get auditions. I was such a stereotypical actress. I was waitressing by night and auditioning by day and trying to get an agent all the time. And that's finally in 2009, I just kind of woke up and said, oh my gosh, I've been in LA for 10 years doing the same thing over and over, expecting different results.
Yeah.
And if I don't change my life, I'll be another 10 years in the exact same place. So I actually packed up my bags and I moved to Albuquerque, New Mexico.
Really?
And yeah, in 2009, I heard the industry was booming and I could not make it as an actor. I couldn't get an agent. I was just hitting rock bottom. And I was like, I got to change up my environment, change up my life. And it was really in New Mexico where I was like, wait a minute. What if I choose myself and I stop waiting for someone to pick me and I pick myself and I start creating my own movies. And that's how it all started, was in New Mexico with a group of other indie filmmakers who wanted to make stuff on their off time. And we started making our own movies.
Oh, that's wonderful. And that's really kind of living the dream right there. Because when you have that sort of community, that all of a sudden, you know, everyone is kind of dialed into the same thing that you are, but they're all they all have their own specialties.
Exactly.
Then all of a sudden you start to feel like, oh, you know, like you can do this and I can do this and I can do this. And that just gets like the juices flowing even more. Just kind of bringing up George Lucas again, American Zoetrope with Francis Coppola, you know, like that was his dream was to have a whole lot of different filmmakers all living under the same roof and creating their own films outside of the Hollywood system.
Yeah. It's so much about finding your tribe too. I mean, that's what we were doing, finding our tribe, finding people that we liked working with, finding finishers. Andrea and I talk about this all the time. Like everyone can start a project, but not everyone can finish it. So surround yourself with finishers who will make sure that movie gets done.
I love that. I absolutely love that. Find your finishers. That's perfect. That's so perfect. So for 10 years, just to kind of backtrack a little bit, 10 years, were you getting roles at all? Like during that time?
Very little. Like I did some indie work. I worked with Evan Glaudell, who did a movie called Bellflower that went to Sundance in 2011. And I had friends who were all, but you know, back in that day, now we can be a multi-hyphenate. We can be a director, producer, a writer, an actor. But back then it was like, you could only be one thing. And I hadn't even thought about getting a camera and starting to learn how to make something. I really thought you just pursue acting. And my life was so empty because it was just about being an actor. And every day I'd wake up being like, how do I make it? But you can't work hard enough for someone to choose you.
Yeah.
And you know, what incredible thing that I chose myself and started making my own stuff because I have a really strong work ethic. And once I started creating my own projects, I would finish it and make it. But you can't do that as an actor because you have absolutely no say in why someone chooses someone or not. And then you feel crazy because you're like, I'm working so hard, but it's not going anywhere. It's not resulting in anything. I have no results. So I didn't really work that much. Some indie stuff here and there, but I was pretty much a full-time waitress or receptionist or a stand. I did start standing in New Mexico. That was a fun job. I was Megan Fox's stand-in. I was Kat Dennings' stand-in on Thor.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And I've stood in on a lot of movies, and that was very good learning process to be on a set, a big major set as a stand-in, because you're in the middle of everything and you get to watch everything and learn. And yeah, so I was not really booking anything in my 20s. Just little horror movies and stuff.
Yeah, but you know, but at the same time, though, you know, once you got yourself over to this other community,
right?
Is that where you felt like you, all the lights were going on, and you were just like, "This is it. You know, this is what I need to do."
Yes. Yeah. When I went to New Mexico, things were clicking so much better. And when I got my group of friends together, we all decided to make our first feature. There was about five of us that went to the New Mexico desert and made this feature film. I paid out of pocket for it. All my friends volunteered. It's called Home Sweet Home. Mm-hmm. I ended up shooting. We finished the feature. We brought it back to Los Angeles, and then we ended up getting a sales agent, and we were able to sell that movie. We just thought we'd show our parents. We were like, let's make a new feature, show our parents, prove we can make a feature so that later we can get investment. And then actually we ended up selling that movie to a major distribution company. And that's what's pretty much parlayed our entire career of where we are now.
Oh, that's wonderful. That is so wonderful. And that's the dream that so many people have. Mm-hmm. So you were able to accomplish that. That's wonderful. Now, Andrea, where do you come into this portion of everything? Were you going to New Mexico as well?
I was not. I have been actually all through that whole story. I was in the same town I am right now, Chippewa Falls, Wisconsin. Wow. But where I entered the story is that I was standing at the top of my steps with a laundry basket when Alexander called and said that their sales agent had suggested that maybe they look at making a faith-based movie next. And she said, "Would you be interested in joining us?" And I think this is in keeping with your whole kind of motto for the show. But I said yes. I had no idea what I was doing. I had done a lot of writing, but I'd never written a screenplay, never made a movie, liked watching movies.
Yeah.
And we said yes. And then actually that winter, Alexandra ended up moving in and we wrote the script together. And Wisconsin has no tax incentives. So there's no real reason you'd ever want to make a movie in the middle of the tundra. Mm-hmm. But that winter, while Alexandra and I were writing, we'd go to coffee shops and people, Midwest Nice, people would come up and want to know what we're doing and start talking to us. And when we told them we're writing a movie, they're like, "Are you going to make the movie here?" And we're like, "No, probably not." And what do you need? What do you need? How could we get you to make the movie here? And we basically said, "Well, we need locations. We need that." We gave a list, and every single location we needed down, and our movie has football in it, our first movie, Catching Faith, and like down to the actual football uniforms, everything we needed, our town gave us to be able to make our movie.
Wow.
It has gone to be the top five consistent sellers for the distribution company. Thank you.
That is huge. That's so great. And so I just want to paint the picture here. So the two of you were sitting at a coffee shop, you said, like over in Wisconsin?
Exactly. Yep.
Just sitting there, bowling you with laptops and just hammering away on it. And then people just started coming up to you?
Yeah, that's exactly it. I mean, literally, this is the kind of coffee shop where they carry the coffee pot over and fill up your cup, you know, keep it full while we're working.
Yeah.
And then people would be listening. And there is this saying, Midwest Nice, it's because your neighbors want to know everything that's going on in your life. So people are listening. And then they would literally like pull their chair up and say, "What are you guys doing?"
This is you want to talk about the dream of every writer out there with the, you know, with their Yankee cap, you know, sitting there in their lap in a coffee shop and everything. They're dying for anyone to come over there and just like, "What do you work on?" So you can talk about it. So and I speak as one of them. So it's one of those things where that's fantastic. So apparently we just got to like all migrate over to Wisconsin.
Yeah.
And that's where attention goes. So the more you know, right?
Totally. Yeah. And they did. They gave us football stadiums, football jerseys. And, you know, another piece of inspiring part of this story is that when we got an opportunity to make this movie, the budget was so small that I, you know, I decided to give up my apartment and put everything I owned in storage. And I moved in with Andrea in Wisconsin to write the script. And I ended up spending that whole year that we made Catching Faith living out of one suitcase. So wow. If people want to know how you do it, sometimes you really have to make sacrifices and go, but you know, it's paid off. Now I've made 8 feature films. That was our second one, you know, or my second one. So it's paid off, but I did give up my home for a year.
Wow. That's another thing that a lot of people really got to remember that, you know, sometimes you got to make those sacrifices, but in the end, it's going to wind up well for you. So when you were working on Catching Faith, did you have all of those different things in mind, or was it a matter of just kind of looking around and seeing like, oh, there's a football field, we can incorporate football into it? What was the step-by-step of putting that together?
So my sales agent from Home Sweet Home suggested that we move into the faith space, and he said, I'll get the money if you make the movie, but the only requirement is you have to have football. And we had to make a football movie, and we were like, how are we going to make a football movie on this budget?
Yeah.
But thank goodness for Chippewa Falls, Wisconsin, because we got all of the football stadiums and a lot of them too. Bill Engvall's character in the movie, Bill Engvall plays the coach.
Oh, no kidding.
We have him at like 6 different stadiums in the different, you know, and we were actually able to get all those stadiums and jerseys, and every location was donated. The town came out to be extras. I mean, that's another thing. Shoot in a small town where people believe in what you're doing and they'll come out and support you and help. And Andrea's town was so instrumental in making this movie a reality and looking so beautiful for the budget it was.
Oh, that's great. That is like that has me so excited, because there are so many people that are out there that are scattered all around the country that want to do exactly what you're doing. Mm-hmm. And they don't know where to start. They don't know exactly what to do. It's almost like what Robert Rodriguez said when he said that, you know, when it comes to doing an indie film, you got to use what you have.
Yes.
As he said, when he did El Mariachi, he had a guitar case, a bus, and a turtle. So he knew that all three of those were going to be in the movie. And $7,000 later, that's what, you know, he wound up getting. So,
That's what you have to do. You have to be resourceful. And, you know, we might write something with a dream, but if we don't get it, we pivot it. There's many times that we'll write a location that we can't get, so we just rewrite it to a different location. And you have to be, like, so flexible and ready to change it on a dime, because we are working in the confines of a smaller budget. So we don't, you know, have access to whatever we want, but we'll write it and then change it if we don't get it.
And it's great that you have the sort of team behind you that are finishers, as you said, because they're willing to pivot. They're experienced with pivoting. So what was the group that you've been working with, is that consistent throughout all of the films, or you've been working with different crews? What's your current setup?
Mostly it's been the same key players for a long time. Our last film, we changed it up a little bit. But we still work. We had the same director for 6 movies, same cinematographer, same editor now since 2015. So we're always collecting our tribe along the way. And we're like, okay, we love you. We're keeping you. And so, I mean, of course, sometimes when we go to different cities, we'll need to crew up in that city. Yeah. But I would say the main players are the same. We have the same sound designer we've been using for years, the same composer. Andrea actually does production design on our movies.
Wow.
So, yeah. So Andrea is not going to be in our production designer. So we kind of can do it all, like, because we've had to do it all.
That's great. That's very like a one-stop shop kind of thing.
Exactly.
That's wonderful. And so, Andrea, what's your experience been like getting involved in these films? You know, like once you started to get involved, what was your feeling like once you started doing it?
Yeah, well, it's very contagious. So I would say that it's art brings energy and life and light, you know? And so being the experience with Catching Faith, that was much more, you know, on the side of just bringing resources together and writing the script and then getting to watch it come together. And then as things have gone along, I have grown in the way that I've been part of the films. And when we had written Catching Faith 2, the script for the sequel for Catching Faith, and that had a wedding in it. And I was talking to director about the wedding. And I said, you know, when you're writing stuff, you're imagining what it's going to look like. And I'm like, so who gets to like think above just not just the wedding dress, but the whole thing, like how that's all going to pull together. And he said, well, that's the production designer. And I was like, oh, and he goes, want to do it? I was like, again, it was like sort of a, well, yes. And then, you know, a lot of boots on the ground figuring out what that is. But so it's really, really fun, you know, to actually think about what you want something to look like and then bring it together and bring all those pieces. And we, I think Alexandra and I, that tribe that we're talking about behind the camera, also we've got people in many of the cities we've worked in who are just amazing volunteers, not just, but they're amazing volunteers who are like, I need a boombox from the 80s. You have one, you know, in your basement, but you know, like that kind of, like where you can get all those pieces to make that beautiful art set deck come to life. And we've just, we ask, and I think it goes with the yes and the asking, not being afraid to ask for what you need. And it's mm-hmm. And people want to be part of art and making beautiful things. And yeah, so that's kind of how it's evolved. And the last four movies I've done production design and it's been amazing. It's just been an amazing, beautiful journey.
And has it felt easier the more you do it? Because it sounds like a lot of things that you're doing is you're kind of picking things up along the way. So yeah. You're able to kind of take what you have and all of a sudden, you know, when it comes to using your resources, all of a sudden your resources are becoming a little bit more and more vast.
Yes.
So has it felt like you've been able to really kind of use what you now have at your disposal that winds up being a lot more than you thought initially?
Yeah, definitely. And part of that is confidence. You know, your confidence grows every time you do something. And
yeah.
Our editor always says, whenever I'm like, oh my gosh, do you see that? That was a mistake. And she'll be like, yeah, but you'll never do that again. And it's true. Once you see it, you learn and you never do that again. And
yeah.
You'll be watching for that next time, you know, that kind of thing. And I think as we talk about confidence and resources, our most recent movie was filmed at Grand Canyon University in Phoenix, Arizona. And when Alexandra and I had a chance to visit there, it was like a playground for, you know, I mean, a location for a set. I mean, it's like they built it for that, although it really is an active campus, but it's just so beautiful. And there's just so many great buildings and so much, you know, texture and light and excitement. And so being able to, every single movie we've built on, hey, what's the physical locations that we have that we can just exploit what that looks like? And now it's like you see it and go, oh my gosh, the corner of that building would look amazing when the sun's setting. Let's get it.
Right.
So yes, we have told, I think completely every single time there's a little more confidence to be creative and a little bit more of an eye to see how you can use everything around you to make such a beautiful movie come to life.
So when you come up with your initial stories, do you just have it just kind of like just broken down as a basic outline and then you look around to see what you have at your disposal and then just kind of use that to fill in the blanks? Or do you start with the full screenplay and try to get something to accommodate it?
We start with the story. I would say the first thriller I made, Home Sweet Home, we had mm-hmm. one free location. We wrote the entire script around that location.
Yeah.
But now, everyone since then, we have actually written the script and then gone and found everything we needed. So we come up with our idea. We do the whole save the cat outlining and boarding mm-hmm. it and then writing the script. Because we also raise all the private investment. So we have a long process because we'll write the script. Then we're going out to raise the private investment. And then once it's greenlit with the money, then we decide where we're going to shoot it. What city are we going to? And what's the town? And then within that town, you try to get everything that you imagined in the script. But like every movie that we wrote had a bowling alley scene. And
nice.
Every time we shoot, we not get a bowling alley scene. So it switched, you know, you're watching them roller skate because we found a roller skate. Or we had to change so many things. And finally, we got Grand Canyon University and they had a bowling alley.
Yes.
We were so excited because we're like, this, we're finally having a bowling alley. But we'll write it in there. And like we said, we'll hope for the best. But if we have to change it according to where we can get. But we write the script first.
right,
and foremost, and then we go and shoot it.
And do you have like other ideas just kind of on the back burner, thinking that, well, if we don't get this, we can try this instead?
For the scripts or the locations?
For the scripts.
Yeah, well, for a while there, we were kind of just writing one at a time and then making them. But now we've been writing, we'll have a lot of scripts ready to go because, you know, we thought we were making Switched. And right. Then we got the opportunity to make Catching Faith 2. We found investors that were willing to do that one. So we pivoted and we're like, okay, we're not shooting Switched. We're shooting Catching Faith 2. Mm-hmm. Then we're working on The Greatest Inheritance, but we're having trouble getting that. And then Switched got greenlit. So we do things ready to go and seeing what resonates with people and where we can get our investment and where we can shoot the movie. Yeah.
So you got one heck of a slate really as you're going. What's the amount of time that it took to get these pictures made? You have six now, right?
Yeah, we have six.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And they started from 2012 then, or was it
2012, 2013, about around then we did Catching Faith. Mm-hmm. Then right away we did Wish for Christmas.
Yeah.
And we went to our hometown in Massachusetts. We used like our graduating high school. Like that entire movie is Andrea's and I hometown.
Oh, that's great.
And then after that, and that was 2015, I think. And mm-hmm. then 2017, we did Catching Faith 2. 2018, we did Switched. And then 2020, or was it? Yeah. Or maybe it was 2019, we did Switched. Yeah. And then 2020, we did The Greatest Inheritance. And mm-hmm. 2020, one, we did Identity Crisis. So we've been like almost a movie a year.
That's amazing. That's amazing. And during that time, obviously, like we all kind of hit one heck of a wall in 2020 with COVID. Were you able to still navigate getting your movie made with all of that?
Yeah. So do you want me to take that or do you want to take it, Andrea?
Oh, you can.
So we were supposed to shoot in April of 2020 for The Greatest Inheritance. We all flew in February to Columbus, Georgia.
Oh boy.
To go and scout the location and to start lining everything up. And then we all fly home and the pandemic hits in February. Yep. And actually, I'll say what's so great about our team at this time, we were determined to make the movie. So obviously when the airports got shut down and everything really started getting shut down, we were like, oh, we can't make this movie. But what we did as a team was every Friday we got onto a Zoom and we studied what was going on with the COVID testing, what SAG was saying. We were learning and listening and coming up with a plan. So every Friday during the pandemic, we were on Zoom coming up with a plan to be able to get this movie made. And actually we ended up we were one of the first feature films to go under the SAG agreement. And we shot in Columbus, Georgia, July of 2020, we shot that movie.
Wow. That's terrific. That's terrific. That's a great way to get through that. That's wonderful.
We did. We had been studying the code. We got COVID compliance officers. We had some doctors out of Georgia that helped. And what was great about our team is we all do know how to do everything on a film set. So we had to cut our crew in half because of the COVID. So I was script supervisor. Andrew's always production. So everyone kind of did extra jobs so that we could, and we got amazing actors and crew because everybody was looking to work.
Yeah.
So we got Mina Suvari and Jaleel White, who played Urkel on Family Matters. And
that's great.
We had a great cast that all came out. And because we had a proper plan for COVID testing, everybody felt very safe. And, you know, that's like that other thing is we're all just making things up as we go. So, you know, you might have looked at our Friday meetings going, that seems like a waste of time until we were able to use all of that to actually go and make a movie. So,
Absolutely. So one of the things I really want to hear about now is that the one thing that all of us, you know, as film lovers, as, you know, screenwriters, as authors, whatever, you know, like it all comes down to the big release. So tell us about the premiere for that first film. What was that like?
Oh, that you can go, Andrea.
Sure, I will. Oh my goodness. When Catching Faith came out, we had a premiere in our local movie theater called Mycon Cinemas in Chippewa Falls.
Yeah.
We had a
It had to be there.
Had to be there. We had red carpet. We had the newspaper there. And it was thrilling. That theater was packed, and just the joy of seeing our city, of course, come to life on screen.
Yeah.
And we did a really fun Q&A with one of our local radio hosts after the movie was over. And then one of the really cool things is that we had it booked in the downtown theater of a neighboring town called Eau Claire. We had the movie booked, and they said that they'll have it in there for about a week. It sold out for 10 weeks.
Wow.
How much the community, and we've got really fun pictures of people, like, you know, lines of people out the door, you know, waiting to get in to get their tickets. And every week it would be, they're like, well, we're going to have it again. And then it would be sold out again. It was really an amazing experience. It really hit the hearts of our community. And I think the story actually encouraged people. And then they bring their friends and their grandma and their aunts and their uncles and everybody else. And it was really fun.
I'm sure there are business owners too that are thinking, like, you know, like, look at my, you know, shop being immortalized on celluloid. And that's just got to be a wonderful feeling there. And I'm sure that there are a lot of people that are, whoever is listening, I don't want to say a lot of people, but you know, I'm sure there are people listening, you know, just to this show that are thinking, like, ooh, you know, like, if I utilize the resources around me, that can kind of move things along at a much better pace here. So
yes,
I hope that winds up being something that they remember as well, mm-hmm. because it sounds like not only was everyone willing to help, but now all of a sudden there they are putting money into it by selling out the theater.
Yeah.
That's gotta be a wonderful feeling there.
Mm-hmm. It was wonderful. And you know, our second movie that Alexandra mentioned, Wish for Christmas, that was premiered in the high school that we graduated from. And it was also, like, I think 450 people.
650 people showed up.
It was
650. It was sold out. Yeah.
Wow. That's wonderful.
It was just the whole town. Well, first off, the town community wants to see their town in a film. But also, one of the things that Andrea and I have done ever since Catching Faith is we credit all of the extras. So every single person who shows up gets a credit in the end credit. So, I mean, for that movie, there were a couple hundred people who had come, but it means a lot to them to get to come and see their names in the credits. And so, you know, it's just, it is a community made movie. It's like made by them and for them. And I mean, these movies are being seen all over the world. So besides the fact that Titanic, Leonardo DiCaprio talks about Chippewa Falls, Wisconsin, Catching Faith really put Chippewa Falls, Wisconsin on the map.
That's great. I love it. I love it. And that's similar to what I did with one of my books that I had self-published in 2010, because I didn't want to just pay to get it out there or anything. You know, like, I didn't have as much in terms of resources, but what I did have was a lot of friends. And I basically just said to them that if they pre-order their copy now, meanwhile, I'm on like draft three or so. So, you know, it's still like another year before the whole thing's going to get done. Mm-hmm. But I tell them that not only are you going to guarantee your own signed copy, but your name is going to be in the acknowledgement section in the back of the book. Mm-hmm. And everyone wants to see their name in print, just like everyone wants to see their name on the big screen. So those pre-orders started flooding in, and that covered all of my setup costs, covered all my shipping costs. It covered everything that I needed, the printing costs for the books themselves. Like, it was amazing what happens when you involve your people.
Yeah.
So for those that are looking to get into film in some way, they have that passion, they want to get it out there, they have a story within them, they're not sure how to do it, what do you recommend as the first step that they do?
I'll say the one first step, and then Alexander can give you all the how-tos. The first thing is say yes. Decide you're going to do it and take a step in that direction, whatever that looks like. And now she can tell you how to actually do it.
No, I was just going to say, buy my book, Create Your Own Career in Hollywood on Amazon. It literally goes through our entire trajectory of how we built our entire career from scratch. People are always asking to take me to coffee and be like, can I pick your brain? How did you do it? And so I wrote a book, and it's on Amazon. And yeah, I think, I mean, Andrea's right. Just say yes, just do it. Mm-hmm. And then you know, don't look at the forest for the tree. If you look through the whole forest, you'll never, ever think you're going to get to the other side. So it's one tree at a time. And every day you're conquering whatever you need to do that day to have another step forward to finish the movie. Movies mm-hmm. can take a couple of years from conception to completion and yeah. then off distribution. So it's just staying the course, and nobody knows what they don't know till they've done it. So it's okay. Mm-hmm. If you don't know something, you'll figure it out, or you can ask for help. And finding a tribe of people that want to do something different than you.
Yep.
Because as an actor, I only hung out with actors. Well, they yep. didn't want to hold a boom or a camera. And then when I started meeting other people who want to do other things, find people that sometimes you only need five people to make a movie. You need it. Mm-hmm. I made a movie called At Your Own Risk. We made yeah. it all in for $5,000 with four people in the New Mexico desert. That wow. movie is available on Tubi, Amazon, Apple TV, everywhere. And we made it just four people. We had a yeah. camera and a boom, and my friend and I acted in it. And we were really just doing that to test out self-distribution at the time.
Yeah. But
we also, it was just a way that we didn't have to wait to raise private investment. We were just like, let's go out and make a movie. Let's just do mm-hmm. it. And so I think that that's the thing. Like, sometimes people think they need more than they need to get started. You yeah. might just need a couple of people, and people who are talented. You want people behind the camera that know yeah. how to frame up well, mm-hmm. you know, but I would just say finding a tribe of people and then do it, make a short, make a feature, and then do it and teach yourself how to do it. And then you can rely on yourself if you can't get someone else to do it.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I hope that all of you are just as inspired as I am after listening to Alexandra and Andrea telling their story. And I hope that you go ahead and get Alexandra's book that will break down everything, the whole process on mm-hmm. how to get your movie made. And remember, use the resources that are around you. Find your tribe, get the people that are going to push you forward, and make sure that they are finishers, not just starters. So you do that, you surround yourself with good people, you keep that positive vibe going, you keep on pushing forward, and guess what? Nothing's going to stop you, because you are going to get your work out there, and this audience that's out there, they're ready for you. So yeah. pursue those dreams, get those visions going, get that creative outlet in the works, and nothing can stop you. So for the Boylan sisters, Alexandra and Andrea, this is George Soroy saying to all of you, ever upward, and I will see you next week.
Thank you very much for listening to this episode of Excelsior Journeys. I hope it was both inspiring and entertaining. Special thanks to Zach Comtois for providing new music for the intro and outro. Please take a moment to leave a rate and review on Apple Podcasts. And if you enjoy the show, please share it with your friends and subscribe to your platform of choice by going to hesgotit.com/podcasts. While there, you can also fill out the application to be a guest, inquire about sponsorship opportunities, and click on the Buy Me a Coffee link if you wish to give your support to the show. All interaction is very much appreciated. If you have a question, comment, or suggestion for the show, please direct it to George@hesgotit.com.